Okay, we're going to start Sweet 24, Perek, Zion, Pasik, Ches,
Revi.
I press the second one. Okay. The Pasik says, Vayem Hashem al Moshe v'aladin lemer, Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron saying, what did he say? So the Pasik says as follows, Ki yedaber aleichem Parei, Lamer, when Paro will speak to you saying, because you're coming to Paro, you're telling Paro you want the Jews to go out of Egypt. So when you come to Paro, and he will tell you, Tunulacha Mefitz, give a sign that there's a, you know, there's a need to the one that's sending you. The Grashi explains that, you know, you're talking business. So Vamata al Aaron, you should take, tell Aaron as follows. Kachas matcha, take your stick, Vahashech lifnei Paro, and throw it before Paro, in front of Paro. Yehila Sanin is going to become a snake. So, okay, basically throw down the stick and it's going to become a snake. This is, because like the Mefarshim explained, that when the Egyptians start screaming, you know, what's going on over here, you say, people will know that you were already pre-warned. So later they shouldn't come with complaints. Why is God punishing Paro without them even getting a warning? Because according to Halacha, you're not allowed to punish unless if you warn somebody. So they have to warn him. So what happened? Vayavim Meshav Aaron al Paro. So Meshav Aaron come to Paro. Vayasu chen, and they did it. Kasher tziva Hashem, like Hashem said. Now, the question is, okay, let's just say, Vayashach Aaron is Mateo. So Aaron threw the stick, lifnei Paro, in front of Paro. Vilifnei Avadim, in front of his servants. Vayil Asanin, became a snake. So the commentators ask a very simple question in this pasuk. It says in the pasuk that they did what God commanded, and then it says Aaron threw the stick. So, if that's what Hashem commanded, why are you saying like two separate things? They're saying that Hashem said whatever, and they did it, and then Aaron threw the stick. So Mefarshim explain what was it. So they say as follows. What did it mean, Kasher Tziva Hashem? What did Hashem command? That Moshe should go in front of Aaron. Even though Aaron was older, even though Aaron was the one that was going to be doing the miracle to present by throwing the stick down, nevertheless, Hashem wanted Moshe to go first. Aaron was not jealous, and therefore it says, why didn't Moshe allow Aaron to go first? Because Hashem said so. And that's the pasuk starts off by saying, Vayavim Moshe v'Aaron al Paro, first was Moshe, then Aaron. Because normally, according to Halacha, Moshe had to give respect to Aaron. He was older. Nevertheless, the pasuk says, why? Kasher tziva Hashem, because God commanded it. Then it says, the second thing they did. Vayashlech Aaron es Mateo, he threw his stick. Bethnei Paro v'Avadav, Avodav, in front of Paro and his servants.
Aaron
mashlech et ha Mateo, not Moshe? No, that's what he said. Hashem said to him, Vamarta el Aaron kachas matcha. And therefore, Aaron had to be the one to do it. Okay? That's a whole discussion. Interesting. I was going to just discuss this now. Huh? So the Kli Yakud discusses a very interesting concept. Here the Pasuk seems to imply that Matcha, or as the Pasuk, Vayashich Aaron es Matehu, Aaron threw his stick. It doesn't say Aaron threw Moshe's stick. And the Kli Yakud asked, because in Parshas Shmos, when Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, if Paro doesn't believe you, take your stick and throw it. So Hashem over there is telling him, take your stick. And here it seems to imply Matcha. And in fact, the Kli Yakud asked the question, he says, Kana mashi yikach mate Aaron. And earlier in Parshas Shmos, it says Moshe should take a stick. Okay, so now he says as follows. He elaborates the whole thing. There were two sticks over here. There was Mate Aaron and there was Mate Moshe. Aaron had a stick, Moshe had a stick. What does it mean, Lesanin? So normally in the Chumashim is defined, Tanin is a snake. But some of Farshim in the Medrash learn, Taninim Hagdelim, if you remember earlier in Chumash, when God created the big fish, so Tanim is a fish, a big fish. Taninim Magdalim, whatever they are. Some people learn over there was the whales. No, at Tanina Magdalum, some people learn was the whale. Okay, because that's modern Hebrew. So he says, so there was stick of mat aron is a stick of, you know, aron stick. So Hashem wanted to show, because like this somebody would think, that the sticks are doing the miracles. Only the sticks are doing the miracles, not Hashem. So Hashem sometimes saying take aron's matter, sometimes takes Moshe matter, to show that it wasn't the stick that was doing, it was like a special miracle stick. Hashem was doing the miracle, sometimes with this stick, sometimes with this stick. So over here, Taka, the Pasuk is saying that he has to take aron's stick. Yeah. He was a Talmud of the Mashal. He wrote a lot of very interesting things. Okay. So now, Aaron is supposedly doing a miracle. So the Medrash says, Paro started laughing. He said, well, you did a miracle? This is a witchcraft. And it's like, you want to show off, you come to an electronic show. You know, it's full of electronics, and you want to show your a foolish little electrical device. People are going to laugh at you. Here you're talking about sophisticated stuff, and you're bringing in a little piece of junk. Pirate the Medrash started laughing. He says, this whole thing is, Egypt was the source of all witchcraft in the world. And here he's doing a big deal. He's doing a little magic show. You know that the stick is turning into a snake. What's the big deal? So Vayikra Gam Pari also called Lechachamim v'lemachashvim, to the magicians, to the witchcrafters. V'yasu gamheim chatumim mitzrayim, and the chatumim mitzrayim did it, v'lehatem with their magic came the same thing. So basically they also did it. They took a stick and it became into a snake. But here's where the uniqueness is. V'yashlichu ish matehu, each man threw their stick, v'yiyu l'saninim, and they became these snakes or fish, whatever it is. But then, v'yiv l'mati arin es mateisim. And here is the miracle. The miracle was that Aaron's stick swallowed their sticks. And the Pasuk, the Mefarshim emphasize, it doesn't say that his snake swallowed their snake. That's not such a big miracle. I mean, it's a miracle, but it's not such a big miracle. Here it says that the mati arin, the stick, swallowed their sticks. Which means after it became back into a stick, as a stick, it swallowed up their sticks. And this is even a bigger miracle. And this the Chatum and the Medrash says couldn't do. So initially, Paro was shocked. How did this happen? That was the special thing. Nevertheless, v'yichazek leif Paro v'lishom alim. Hashem hardened his heart and he didn't listen. By the way, it doesn't mean Hashem hardened his heart here. It's still Paro hardening his heart. Because remember last time we were discussing that how can Hashem punish Paro if he says I'm hardening his heart? So the answer is initially Paro hardened his own heart. And then after he became, so to speak, addicted, then Hashem hardened his heart.
You're saying the miracle was the stick eating the other stick?
That was the primary miracle.
Was it after the fifth plague that Hashem hardened his heart? Or
yeah.
After about the fifth plague?
Right. Now, another opinion says, another interesting concept over here, brings down that why Taka didn't Hashem want Moshe's stick over here to do the miracle? We learned that he told Aaron to take Aaron's stick. Why didn't Hashem tell Moshe to take his stick and throw it down? So some of Hashem learned, because the fact that the magicians of Egypt, the witchcrafters of Egypt, also did it, that belittled really the miracle that took place. So Hashem didn't want that Moshe's stick should be, so to speak, equal to theirs. They did it and his stick did it. So Hashem didn't want, because Mata Moshe was the primary Mata, so Hashem wanted that Aaron's stick should do it rather than Moshe's stick. That's why Hashem wanted it that way. Now, another interpretation over here is as follows. In Shmos, when Hashem said to Moshe, throw your stick down and it became a snake, because Moshe spoke Lashon Hara against the Jews. Like we learned in Parsha Shmos, why did Hashem tell Moshe, throw down your stick by the burning bush, and it became a snake? because Moshe Rabbeinu spoke Lashon Hara against the Jews. He said the Jews are not going to believe. So Moshe Rabbeinu spoke bad about the Jews. So Hashem showed him, you're like the Nachash. The Nachash also spoke Lashon Hara to Chava with the Chet Tadas. So Hashem said to Moshe, then I want you to throw your stick down that it should become a snake to show that you did something wrong. But when he's talking about Pare, then he wanted Aaron's stick should do it because he didn't want Moshe's stick to be equal to their sticks.
Rabbi, yeah. The Egyptians used magic.
They had witchcraft. It's not what we call magic in a magic show.
Which one was it?
Which, what?
It was witchcraft, not magic.
Witchcraft.
The powers and the evil powers, right?
Yes. It's interesting, though, the Rambam, and it's very interesting because many people disagree with the Rambam, but the Rambam maintains that witchcraft is false, it's foolish. The Rambam says only foolish people, fools, believe witchcraft. Witchcraft is nothing real, and it's bluff, and it's for stupid people. That's what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Aveda Zara. So it says that even though, I mean, the Mamle is being done also, even though it was only like Achiza Sinayim, it was only something that looked. But according to most other Mefarshim, witchcraft is something real. That's why we learned the Mishnah says in Sanhedrin, there's a Mishnah in Sanhedrin that speaks about magic, witchcraft. The Torah says, Mechashefa lo sechaya. Somebody who practices witchcraft, Bezdin would kill. Yeah, in Mishpatim. Mechashefa lo sechaya, if somebody does witchcraft, you have to kill him. So the Mishnah, and this Mishnah, that you have to learn, figure out how to explain the Rambam, because this Mishnah seems to contradict the Rambam. The Mishnah says, concerning witchcraft, if somebody does real witchcraft, you kill him. Ha'eche zinayim means somebody who does like fake witchcraft, illusionary witchcraft, then you don't kill him. But the question is, according to the Rambam, if all witchcraft is anyway only an illusion, so what's the difference between real witchcraft and illusion witchcraft? But the Rambam does say it's an illusion and it's foolish and you shouldn't believe in it and so on and so forth. That could be part of witchcraft. It depends how they magid asidot. I mean, Nevi and prophets also tell the future, but it's not witchcraft. When Avraham Avinu remarried Keturah after Sarah passed away and Yitzchak went to bring, you know, Keturah and so on. So it says over there he had a bunch of kids from Keturah. Okay? At the end of Chayi Sarah. It says over there Avram had a bunch of kids from Keturah and it says Avram Avinu gave him presents and he sent them away to get away from Yitzchak. So Rashi quotes in, at the end of Chayi Sarah from the Medrash, what gifts did Avram give them? So it says, Shein Tumah Masa Lahem. He gave him the power of witchcraft, which came from Tumah. In other words, like we learned many times, Zeh L'Uma Zeh Asalikim. God makes equal powers in Kedusha and in evil, because everything has to be balanced. Therefore, Hashem made prophets by Jews, Hashem gave a prophet Bilam. You know, there has to be equal balance. Doing miracles, doing supernatural things, whether it's doing miracles or it's talking about the future, is basically a godly power. It's a power of Kedusha, which is above nature. That's how you do miracles. But Hashem gave the equal power of changing nature, so to speak, doing miracles in the level of Tumah. Yeah, well, that's the difference, though. The difference is how one utilizes it. If they utilize it for Kedusha, so then you know it's coming from Hashem. If they're utilizing it for evil, so then you know it's coming from evil.
We know, but when you want to prove something to, even to Jewish...
The Rambam says that the Jews did not believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because of the miracles he did. They didn't believe in him because of the miracles. Because miracles is not what's going to make it or break it. Hasidim say that in the time of the Alter Rebbe, in the Alter Rebbe's times, they say the expression in Yiddish, as gewalget mofsim unter den Tisch, miracles were rolling under the table, and nobody bothered to bend down to pick them up. Meaning, like the Alter Rebbe himself once said, to do a miracle, yeah. So one of the Alter Rebbe's colleagues was talking with the Alter Rebbe about certain of their students. And one person said to the Alter Rebbe, you see this guy, he's able to do mafsim. He's able to do miracles. So the Alter Rebbe said to him, to do a miracle, you have to be one tefach, one hand breadth higher than the world. If you're a little bit higher than the world, you can do miracles. But he said, this Chabad is the concept of Alevcha Chochma, Alevcha Bina, 2,000 amos, 2,000 cubits higher than the world. In other words, you don't take the greatness of somebody because of the miracles that they do. That means they're a little bit greater than the world, so they can do miracles. So even in evil, Hashem had to make an equal power. So Hashem made that evil is able to do miracles too. But it's evil. It's not a productive type of evil. And therefore, a person that does witchcraft, you have to kill. A Jewish person does witchcraft. It's possible that a guy is allowed to do witchcraft, but a Jew is not allowed to do witchcraft. Yeah.
So how does Rambam explain what happened when the Egyptians made their sticks?
He says it was only an illusion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is contradictory.
Right. Okay, so then... Miracles.
So
a tzaddik could do miracles.
Oh, a tzaddik can do miracles.
No, because you're not doing it as witchcraft. You're doing it as the power of Hashem giving you.
Oh, okay.
The ability to do miracles. It's not the tzaddik doing the miracle. The tzaddik is the vessel for Hashem to reveal supernatural things in the world.
Oh, okay. I didn't mean to say that. But I
mean, no, but everybody, you know.
So if a Kabbalist does a miracle,
it's Kedusha.
It's Kedusha.
Yeah. If a Goyish person does his miracles, it's not coming from Kedusha.
Right, but they're not Chayamita, I'm saying that...
No, for them, probably not.
Uh-huh. So how do you know if it's coming from... If a Jewish person does it, if it's coming from Kedusha... Or
how Kedusha? Do you know if prophecy is coming from Hashem? So it says, if it's to strengthen Torah mitzvahs, to bring out more things of Kedusha, so then you know it's coming from Hashem. Otherwise, it's coming from evil.
I'm saying if you do like a witchcraft type thing, how do you know if it's...
If it's something which comes from Kedusha, then a person saying Hashem is doing the miracle, then it's coming from Kedusha.
Supernatural powers exist today in Tzadikim?
In Tum, it's very possible. Nobody's saying that the supernatural powers don't exist by Goyim. It could exist today. Not as much. Kishuv is not as... far-reaching as public as it used to be in the olden times. In the olden times, it was mamish the concept of kishuv. The Gemara talks many stories about people used to do black magic and witchcraft. In the time of the Gemara, there were people, men and women, that were doing witchcraft. Mostly women. That's why Rashi explains in this week's parsha, mechashefa leisechaya, why does it say mechashefa, feminine, rather than mechashef? So Rashi says that then it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. Most of the witchcrafters in those days were women. So therefore, the Torah speaks about the majority of people.
Why was that?
Yeah, but the fact was that women used to do it.
Why was that?
I don't know. I don't know, maybe because they were bored. What's the difference? Okay, so now... The Mefarshim explain that when Mata Aaron remained as a Mata swallowed their sticks, some Mefarshim learn that it doesn't mean that the sticks, their snakes became sticks again, but it means basically that Aaron swallowed it up. And the second miracle was that even though he swallowed up all those sticks, the stick was still skinny. I mean, if you think about the snake, Aaron's sticks swallowed up all their snakes, so it should have expanded, gained weight.
Same size.
Remained the same. The stick didn't have to buy new clothes. Okay. And the Mefarshim just add to this one more point, which is an interesting point. that why, what's the lesson over here of the snake becoming a stick again, as far as Paro is concerned? And he says, the lesson is that even though right now Paro is overpowering the Jews, powerful over the Jews, but the end result is he's going to become a dried stick. In other words, he's going to become a nothing. Okay, so now the Pasuk says, Pasuk Yudalit. V'yem Hashem al Meisha, Hashem said to Meisha, Kaved Leif Pari. Kaved Leif Pari literally means that his heart became heavy. Or we'll soon see another interpretation is, it means it became like a liver. Kaved in Hebrew is liver. Chopped liver. But he wasn't chopped. He says, Pari's heart became like liver. And the Mefarshim explained, what does it mean his heart became like liver? Liver, the more you roast it on the fire, the harder it gets. The more Paro was roasted by Hashem, the harder his heart got. So that's why the Pasuk uses the expression, Kaved Leif Paro, his heart became like a liver. It hardens more. And he brings down a very interesting mashal. The Medrash brings down a beautiful mashal. It's a famous mashal. It says, a lion was once going, this is an analogy, so a lion was walking with, the lion's the king of the animals. So the lion is walking with all the animals. And amongst them was a fox, a shul. And along the way, that they met a donkey who was a tax collector. And so when the people are coming, the lion and the fox and all the animals are coming, so the donkey is asking for the tax. So the fox says to the donkey, what type of chutzpah do you have? Do you know that the lion is the king of all the animals? You're going to take taxes from the king? So the lion got so angry at the donkey, he killed the donkey. The lion jumped on the donkey and killed him. After he killed the donkey, the lion gave the donkey to the fox to prepare a meal. All of a sudden, the shul is cutting up limb by limb, and along the way, the fox sees the heart of the donkey, so he eats it up. Quietly, he's cooking dinner, so he eats up the food. So later, the lion comes and says to the fox, where's the heart? He looks at the menu, and he sees there's no heart. So he says, so the fox is shrewd. He says to the lion, if this chamer had a heart, do you think he would demand taxes from the king? He doesn't have a heart. So he says the same thing, Paro is like the donkey. If he would have a heart, and he wouldn't do this to the Jewish people. So it says his heart was like a liver. His heart became like the liver, that he didn't have a heart because he was able to do such terrible things to the Jewish people. So that's why the Pasuk uses the expression, Kaved Leif Paro, not only became heavy, but it actually became like a liver. That the more you roast it, the harder it gets. Okay, so what does Hashem say? Kaved Leif Paro, Paro's heart is hard. Me'en l'shalach ha'am, from to send the people. He doesn't want to send the people. So therefore, you have to do as follows. Lecho Paro ba'beker. Go to Paro early in the morning. Hine yetzi ha'mayma, he was going out to the water. Why? So the Medrash explains as follows. Paro told everybody he's a god. And gods don't go to the bathroom. So Paro trained his body to have to go to the bathroom early in the morning before day broke. And Paro ordered nobody in the country is allowed to go out of their houses until daybreak. That nobody should catch him going to the bathroom. And Paro every morning went to the Nile to go to the bathroom, so to speak. So all the message time when Hashem sent Moshe Rabbeinu to Paro, a bunch of times he told him, go to Paro early in the morning and catch him in the act. As if to say, to show Paro, we know who you really are. You know, we know that you're not a god, you're just faking and bluffing. So that's what he says, go to Paro, in a yeti hamayma, he's going out to the water, and everybody should see the bluff, you know, that he's a god. And it's very interesting, this is a very important lesson, by the way. normally, when you're angry at somebody and you really want to get back at him and you have the ability to get back at him, you're not going to warn him. You're just going to do it. Every one of the 10 plagues, every single one, Hashem gave him a warning. And each plague, the warning was 3 weeks, and the plague took a week. Each, in other words, the duration of the 10 plagues took 10 months. 3 weeks warning, 1 week the plague. 3 weeks warning, 1 week the plague. Every plague took a month. And it shows, so to speak, the mercy, the rachmanis that Hashem had, that Hashem never punished Pare until he warned him for 3 weeks before each plague. Even though Hashem had the ability to do it without warning him. And normally, if you want to make a surprise attack, you don't warn the people, we're telling you this is what it is all about. On the contrary, you don't warn them. That's a sneak attack, that's how you fight a war, by not telling the people. And that's why, you know, and we see it in today's world, by the way, the suicide bombers is the worst type of enemy. Because an enemy, well, you know who they are and where they are, so, you know, you prepare yourself how to fight them. These guys come unexpectedly, it's impossible to know. It's impossible to know who they are, and that's the worst type of thing, because you don't have any warning. When you have a warning, you know who the enemy is and what they're doing, what they're planning, you act accordingly. So Hashem, and this is a lesson for us, never do something to somebody without first warning them for an extended period of time, for 3 weeks. I mean, it was an extended warning. He didn't tell them once. Mamish, 3 weeks he warned them.
You mean he was giving them every day?
Yeah.
For 3 weeks every day?
What?
What if you're a trial attorney?
First of all, according to law, a lot of times you have to give him all the information that should be able to defend himself. No, according to law, you have to. If you don't give if the prosecutor doesn't give the defense people the papers and everything, it's a mistrial.
Then you can't present it as evidence.
Right. Yeah, because they need the opportunity to defend it. They always have something that illegally they don't have to tell them, that that's the trick of it. But no, you do have to warn the person. Okay, another opinion says Paro was afraid to go to the bathrooms because a rat once bit him 12 times. I mean, 12 rats bit him. So Paro went in the bathrooms, who knows?
Okay.
Rabbi, I don't remember his name, but during World War II, we had an enemy who pretended he would strike in the east, but then struck in the west, or the other way around. I just don't remember his name.
Yeah, I remember, yeah, so.
Until we caught him.
Okay.
Took a lot of lives.
This is a tragedy.
But you know, the interesting thing is that Hashem doesn't have to be afraid of anybody. Like this, you have to warn, when you warn somebody, you might be afraid that they'll be able to respond. Hashem says to him, whatever I want to do, I'm going to do anyway. You're not going to be able to stop me. But the lesson for us is, you know, even in halacha, the halacha is, ein einshin, ela im kein mazhidim. The Gemara says, in Makkos and different places, you don't, Bezdin cannot give somebody a punishment unless if he was warned. If somebody ate chazer, where you get 39 lashes, if the person was not warned beforehand, he doesn't get malchus. If somebody wasn't warned in death penalty, there are a few exceptions, but as a rule, if you weren't warned in death penalty, you will not get the death penalty.
What about common sense?
Well, sometimes, you know, if it's so obvious, if somebody's killing somebody, but generally speaking, for a law of the Torah, you need to be warned, otherwise you cannot be punished. Hashem warns us in the Torah. If you don't behave,
right,
these things are going to happen.
No,
and many times in Tanakh, the Nevi'im, if you read the Psukim, the Nevi'im were told by Hashem, go warn the people that if they don't behave, you know, this is what's going to happen.
But
even the Mafti Yaina, when we read on Yom Kippur, what did Hashem tell Yaina? What was the whole prophecy that Yonah ran away from God and ended up in the fish? Yeah? What did Hashem tell Yonah? Go warn the king of Nineveh that if you don't do tshuva, I'm going to turn over the city of Nineveh. Even the Goyim were warned by Hashem. So there was a warning process. What? According to one opinion. He found out later how to stop it. Not what caused it, how to stop it. Yeah?
Rabbi, I don't know if you, when you said, if you meant today, you got to tell a person that if he rapes and kills somebody, he's going to get the death sentence?
Yeah.
Today, it's the law.
I know, it's the law in Torah too, by the way.
So, if a guy does that, and he's caught, and he's tried, and he's sentenced.
But the witnesses have to warn him anyway. Yeah, that's the law. If not,
rapists and murderers who aren't warned in advance.
Okay, that's where the whole question with capital punishment today. What's Torah's view of capital punishment? Is a big question today. Is halacha. Okay, anyway, next pasuk. So go to party in the morning. We need tafta lekrasi osfasa yaird. You should meet him at the edge of the river. V'amata shenepach lenochosh, and the stick which was transformed to the snake, which obviously, according to what we learned, is Aaron's stick. Tikach biyadacha, take in your hand. V'amarta elav, and you should say to him as follows. Now the Mefarshim explained, why did Hashem want him to take the stick? Because if he's going to have the stick, Paris saw that this is a miraculous stick that swallowed up all the other snakes and sticks, so Paris was going to be a little bit afraid. So he says, Hashem says, I'm giving him warning, take the stick. V'amarta elav, you should tell him as follows. Hashem elokeo ivrim shulchani alecha leimer, God, the God of the Jews, sent me to you. Shalach esami, send away my nation. V'yavduni b'midbar, and let them serve me in the desert. V'inei lo shamayta ad koi, simply means you didn't listen until now. I warned you already, you didn't listen, I'm warning you again. Rashi explains a deeper meaning of the word koi. What koi are we talking about? Hashem is prophesizing, so to speak, that Pari will not listen until Koya Mar Hashem, when God says later on, Kechatzei Salayla, in the midnight, I'm killing all the firstborn. Simply, Atkoy means he didn't listen until now. But the word in Hebrew should be Adhena, until now. Atkoy means until the Koya Mar Hashem that God said, I'm going to kill all the firstborn. That's when Pari will finally wake up and listen. Now, what is he going to do? Koyamar Hashem, this is what God said. The Zay stated, this is the way you will know, Ki ani Hashem, that I am God. Hine anechi maka b'mata shebiyodi, I am going to hit with the stick in my hand, ala mayim shebiyod, and the water which is in the Nile, v'nepchul adam is going to turn into blood. Rashi explains the order of the plagues, but there's a lot of deeper meanings in it. But the first plague was dam. Because in war tactics, when you want to conquer a city, the first thing you do is poison the water supply. Because then they don't have water to drink. So they're forced to surrender earlier. Okay? That's the simple meaning. Then, what do you do next? You start making a big commotion to get them scared that they should think thousands and thousands of people are coming. When you only have a few people. You make a lot of noise. So that's where the second plague was, Tzardeya, the frogs. We're hacking a Chinik, you know, it sounded like a big army of frogs. But that's the simple meaning Rashi quotes in the Medrash. This is just war tactics. In a deeper sense, and we're going to learn more when we get into the Makkah itself, why did God take the Nile and turn it into blood? What was the significance of it in a deeper level? So according to Chassidus, the meaning of the Makkah of Dam is two things. Water is cold. The Nile was the idol of Egypt. Idol worship, they worshiped the Nile because the Nile overflowed and irrigated the whole land of Egypt. So the Egyptians actually worshiped the Nile as a god, which explains a lot of issues we learned. If you remember in Paro's dream about the seven fat cows and the seven skinny cows, the dream was that the cows came out of the Nile. Both cows. Mm-hmm. And in Paro's repeating of the dream to Yosef, He doesn't say the bad cows came out of the Nile. The pasuk says the bad cows came out of the Nile too. Pari just said there were seven bad cows. He didn't say they came up from the Nile. So the Mefarshim explained, because the Nile was the god of Egypt, Pari didn't want to dream and say that bad cows come out from the god. So there's a lot of psukim that shows that the Egyptians worshipped the Nile. And that's why we learned at the beginning of Parshas Shmos, why did Pari say throw the boys into the Nile? What was the spiritual significance of that? Throw them in into the idolatry of Egypt. Now, drown them with the idol of Egypt. So the Ya'ird was the idol of Egypt, and the Nile obviously is water, which is cold. Water is cold. Idol worshipping is cold, because God is life. Life is when you're warm. A dead body is cold. So connection to godliness is life, warmth. Cold, Nile is cold, Aveda Zod, there's no life to it, there's no Kedusha, there's no warmth, there's no Chayas, there's no excitement, so on. Hashem wants to show, how do you destroy Egypt? In a spiritual sense, how do you get rid of the evil of Egypt? So God said, the first thing you do is take the coldness of the idol worshipping and you turn it into blood. Blood is a sign of warmth, life. You know, that's what blood is. It's blood, ki adam hu anefesh. The nefesh, life, is in the blood. So the first lesson is, you want to get rid of the spiritual Egypt that we all have, the spiritual power within us. You have to take the coldness of Egypt and turn it into blood. Meaning, take the coldness that Egypt has to Yiddishkeit and transform it into warmth. That's why the first plague was dam. And then he says as follows. What's going to be with this? V'adog asher b'yair tomus, the fish which will be in the Nile will die. Uvo asher yair, and the yair will like dry up. V'nilu mitzrayim, and the people are going to have a big problem of lishtei smayim in a yair, to drink water from the Nile. So basically Hashem is saying to them, it's going to dry up, the Nile is going to, you know, not produce any, all the fish are going to die, it's going to be a pretty sad plague. This was the warning. Obviously, Pari did not react to the warning, so Hashem's going to step two of making it happen, of actually doing it. So in Pasuk Yutes he says, V'yem Hashem, El Meshe, Hashem said to Meshe, Emer El Aaron, you should tell Aaron the following. Kach matcha, take your stick, unetayotcha al meimei Mitzrayim, and take your, stick out your hand on the waters of Egypt, and he says, Al nareisim on the rivers, al yoreim on the yoerd, al agmeim on the pastures, val komikve meimeim, and all gatherings of water, v'yihu dam, is going to be blood. If you take the pasuk literally, what the pasuk means, Aaron had to stick out his hand over every body of water in Egypt. That's what it says. Stick your hand over the water, and the rivers, and the Nile, and the pastures, and any gathering of water in the whole land of Egypt. So Mefarshim asks, how is it possible? He didn't go traveling all around Egypt. So Mefarshim say that what he really did was, he stuck his hand just over the Nile, and that caused all the water in Egypt turned into blood.
What about the water, Jewish water?
Jewish water didn't, we're not done yet, but the Jewish water did not turn into blood. And not only that, he says in the Medrash, the Jews became wealthy during the Makkah of Dam. Because any water that the guy took in his hand, the Egyptian turned into blood. But water that he bought from the Jew, didn't. So anytime Egyptians wanted water to drink, they had to buy it from the Jews. So for a whole week, the Jews were making big business. This is where they became capitalists in Egypt. They started making a lot of money by selling water.
They stayed
water
that way for a long time.
What, wealthy?
From selling water to the Egyptians?
Well, not only, that was only a week's business. You know, Jews can't stay in a business for a long time. They have no zitzfleish. They have to keep moving. the poorest Jew left Egypt with not less than 10 donkeys loaded with gold and silver. That was the poorest Jew.
At that time.
No, when they left Egypt. Well, it was pretty valuable, come on. The only one that really struck it rich was Korach. He found all the treasures that Yosef hid from all the money that came into Egypt. He found the treasures and left with him. That's why in Yiddish there's an expression, Reich wie Korach. The Gemara says, it says that Korach was the wealthiest man that ever lived. Ever.
He died in the desert.
Oh, until he died, yeah. You mean how long he had the money for? Until the earth swallowed him up with everything in it.
And all his wealth, too.
Yeah. If you excavate the desert, you might find it. I wouldn't suggest it. I wouldn't suggest it because it's buried too deep to find. Now, the question is... The Gemara says this is true.
No, I was saying, but it says that, like, those people went to, they listened to the earth and they heard his voice and everything. And
yeah.
If you went today and you listened to it, you could probably hear that. Or...
You have to know where it is.
Yeah.
The Gemara tells a story. There was a person, an Arab, in fact, that went there.
An Arab went there.
And he showed the Jews.
Yeah.
He took them to the exact spot where Korach was swallowed in. He put his ear and he heard... because Korach's children screamed out, Moshe Emes v'Teras Emes.
But his children didn't get swallowed up. He got swallowed up.
Right, they were saved.
Right.
They screamed, Moshe Emes v'Teras Emes.
But you hear Korach's voice underneath.
Ever put the good news for the Jews?
Yeah, it made him chutzpidik, and it made him suffer and end up buried in the ground.
I said good news, Rabbi.
Well, it depends what you call good or not. Now, the question is, why did Hashem tell Moshe to tell Aaron to do it? Why couldn't Moshe himself do it? And we'll soon learn that the first few plagues, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do. Anything that dealt with water, with the Nile, Hashem said to Moshe, it's not for you to do. Why? Because the water protected you. When your mother put the basket in the water protected you. You know, all these things. So it saved you. So it's not right for you to be the one punishing the water. And here again, it's a phenomenal. If you stop to think for a minute, it's an unbelievable lesson. The Chaeda hitting the Nile was good for the Jews. It was good. You know? Or like it says, the next plague, he had to hit the ground by one of the next plagues. He hit the ground. Yeah? Hit the ground. So because Moshe Rabbeinu, when he killed the Egyptian, buried him in the soil and it protected Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, it's not right for Moshe Rabbeinu to hit the dirt. If you think about it, what Moshe Rabbeinu did with the dirt was good. What he did with the Nile was good. Nevertheless, the fact that the Nile protected Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not right for Moshe Rabbeinu to hit the Nile. Many, many years later. This is 80 years later. Because when did his mother put him in the basket? When he was born. And now Moshe Rabbeinu is 80 years old. 80 years later, Hashem said, you know, listen, 80 years ago, the Nile did you a favor. It's not right for you to hit it, even though the outcome of the hitting is really very good. So let somebody else do it. The lesson of what's called in Hebrew not to be a kfir tov, not to be unappreciative of what the person's doing, is an unbelievable lesson from this. Hashem says, the earth protected you many years ago, you're not the one to hit the earth. The water protected you, you're not the one to hit the water. It's not right. So, we have to learn, so to speak, a lesson from this also. That if somebody did you a favor, you don't pay it back with evil. You don't pay it back with not kindness or whatever. It's similar to the famous story, not about this in particular, but at the end of last week's parsha, it says in the Torah, they were not allowed to make steps up to the Mizbeach. There had to be a ramp. Mm-hmm. So it says, why? So the last words in Yisrael, Shalei Segale Adavos and Olav. Because it's not proper when you go up steps, It's not modest, because they didn't wear pants in those days. They wore, like, dresses, basically. Long robes, yeah. So when you walk up steps, your feet open up, so it's not modesty, because the stones underneath, so to speak, can see underneath. Yeah? Even though you're talking about stones. So what type of modesty are you talking about? What type of looking and seeing are you talking about? Nevertheless, you have to worry about, so to speak, the embarrassment of the rocks and embarrassment of the modesty even from rocks, whatever it is. You know, you have to learn a lesson in modesty or things like that. They tell a famous story to Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim was once a guest in somebody's house, Friday night. And the host comes into the house with the Chafetz Chaim, you know, to make Kiddush Friday night. And the wife forgot to cover the challah. You know, you cover the challah Friday night. So the host, in front of the Chafetz Chaim, starts yelling and screaming at his wife. How did you forget to cover the challah? You know which guest we have here, the Chafetz Chaim, and you're doing things wrong. He starts yelling and screaming at his wife why she didn't cover the challah. So Chafetz Chaim is listening to this screaming. And he turns to the host and he says, excuse me, do you know the reason for covering the challah? Why do you cover the challah? So it says, because really, you're supposed to make hametzi before wine. But you're not allowed to eat before Kiddush, so you have to make Kiddush first. So, but really, bread comes first. Right? Bread, normally, if you eat the meal, first comes bread and then bread piagafin. So not to embarrass the bread, you cover it. He said, you're screaming at your wife for not covering the bread, which is not to embarrass the bread, and you're embarrassing your wife. What's worse, embarrassing the bread or embarrassing your wife? You're screaming at your wife for not covering the challah. You don't want to embarrass the challah, so instead you embarrass your wife. He did. So he didn't embarrass him. He led him on to understand it himself. He didn't embarrass him. The guy understood it himself, what the message was.
What's the end of that story?
The host realized his mistake and apologized.
For what?
And they lived happily ever after.
I'm sure if the Chavetz Chaim told him in a way that was like...
Yeah, he just... In a way that he should understand it himself. Right. Okay, so what happens over here? He says, turn it into the blood. Now, the Mefarshim discuss a lot of issues over here. Why did Hashem turn the Nile into blood? So it says as follows. The Egyptians didn't let the women go to use the Nile as a mikveh. Because what did they, I mean, those people, it was before Matan Torah, but those people that kept mitzvahs before the Torah was given, so they didn't let them. So Hashem punished them for the menstrual cycle of blood. So Hashem punished that the Nile, which was supposed to be the mikveh, they didn't let them use the mikveh, so it turned into dam. What? It says that the Jewish women that wanted to go to the mikveh, they didn't let them use the Nile as a mikveh. So therefore, the punishment was become dumb. Okay, so this is what Hashem said to Moshe and Aaron to do. Vayasu kein Moshe va'Aaron kashitziva Hashem. Moshe and Aaron did like Hashem commanded. Vayon b'mati hit with the stick. Vayachas ha'mayim, he hit the mayim which was in the yard. Le'enei paro le'enei avodav. Vayevchul kol ha'mayim asher b'yard le'dam. And all the water that was in the Nile became blood. Vadaga asher b'yared, and the fish which was in the river died. Vayivash ha'yared, and it smelled. V'layochlu ha'mitzrim lishtis mayim min ha'yared, they weren't able to drink any more water from the Nile. Vayi adam b'chalaret mitzrayim, it was all over the place. Meaning, as Rashi says, the whole every water in Egypt became blood. A guy was taking a bath, became. They bought from the Jews.
Huh?
They bought from the Jews.
So the minute they bought from the Jews, they would touch that water and it wouldn't change.
That would not change, correct. But there's another thing. Let's see the next pasuk. Because the next pasuk says, Vayasu kein chatumim mitzrayim belotayim. The Egyptians also did it.
Why would they do that?
One minute. They also did it. They wanted to show. It wasn't a big miracle. It was witchcraft. But the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asked a very simple question. If all the water in Egypt turned into blood, where did the Chatumah get water to make it into blood? No. Because if you're going to see in Pasuk Chav Dalid, it says in the Pasuk that all the Egyptians had to dig around the Nile to get water. So there's two things. Number one, the Pasuk says in Pasuk Chav Dalid, we didn't get to yet, that only the water that was in the open water became blood. The water that was underground did not turn into blood, even when they got it out. And that's why the Arachaim explains, where did the Egyptian witchcrafters get water to make it into blood? They got the water from around the Nile, but not actually from the Nile. No, the illusion. No, but some of Farshim learn, see like this, even, one opinion in the Medrash says, even when the Egyptians poured water into the mouth, it turned into blood. And then he says that Chachom are arguing. Rabbi Yehuda holds, only the Nile was blood. Rabbi Nechemiah holds, every water became full of blood.
But doesn't the passage say that Aaron turned all the waters into blood?
Yeah, but it means all open waters. That's why, because if you see in Pasuk of Dalid, it says they dug around the Nile to find water to drink. So what are they digging for? The answer is that water taka didn't turn into blood. Or, as other Mefarshim learn, the water that they bought from a Jew also didn't turn into blood. So Jews are just running a business.
Where would the Jews get their water?
Oh, when the Jews went to the Nile, it was water. No, when the Jew took water out of the Nile, it was water. Yeah.
And everybody that drank blood died?
Why, when you drink blood, you don't die?
I'm asking.
In the olden times, people used to drink blood.
I'm not a doctor. I don't know.
No, I'm telling you. I'm not a doctor either, but I know it from Chumash. Because there's a mitzvah in the Torah, you're not allowed to drink blood.
They still do.
Yeah.
Was that a mitzvah on a Jew? Was a Jew allowed to drink blood before the Torah was given?
It wasn't forbidden. No, because after when the Torah was given, it says, and not only that, the Torah says, "Rak chazak levilti achel adam." The Torah says a very strange pasuk: "Strengthen yourself and don't eat blood." Rak chazak levilti achel adam. Strengthen yourself not to eat blood, which implies you have to really work on yourself not to drink blood. So Rashi in the Chumash explains in the Gemara from the Medrash that the people in those days were shtufi bedam. They were indulged in blood. They were overly indulged in drinking blood. That the Torah has to warn them, strengthen yourself, don't eat blood. So it was, people used to drink blood.
So before Matan Torah, it wasn't...
It's not Eivir Min HaChai. It's not considered a live limb of an animal. But they didn't necessarily keep them. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept the whole Torah, according to most opinions. Not everybody says that either. But the accepted opinion in the Medrash is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept the whole Torah. Whether the 12 tribes kept is an argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. If the 12 tribes kept the Torah. Then there's another question whether the Jews after that, you know, in Egypt and most opinions say the basic, most of them didn't. Only the mitzvahs they had to keep. But the mitzvahs they didn't have to keep, they didn't keep. Only Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov kept them. And the Shvatim questionable if they kept them. But there was no obligation for them to keep it. Even Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did not have an obligation to keep it. There was no obligation that they had to keep it. Therefore, if you remember, we learned how did Yaakov marry two sisters? Because he promised Lavan he's going to marry her. He had to marry her because that was mandatory. Keeping the Torah was optional. But the optional couldn't take away from the mandatory.
If the Egyptian magician wanted to do the same thing as the Jews did, they could show their power by counterattacking the Jew. Which means if they make it to blood, they make it to water.
I think, I imagine, I hear what you're saying, it's a good question, but I imagine that making into blood is harder than transforming it back into water, back to water. Because if it was originally water, it's probably easier to make it back into water. But to change its nature to begin with, from water to blood, is probably much harder.
Yeah, but by vice versa, we say we are more powerful than your blood.
No, but that's what I'm saying, they're not going to show they're more powerful. Because to change blood back to water is not as powerful as making the original water into blood. Because if it's really water, all you're doing is making it back to what it was. It's not as powerful as making it the first change.
Maybe orange juice.
They couldn't do it.
The what?
They couldn't change the blood back into water.
The Rebbe said he couldn't change it. Why? Well, the obvious question is, you know, if the magicians were able to transform, why didn't they turn the blood back into water? Not because to show them, just for themselves, to get water to drink. So the answer is because Hashem didn't let them. Hashem didn't let them do it, so it didn't happen. If it didn't happen, it didn't happen.